Welcome to the Baird Group Restructuring Review for July 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Trouble Company Reporter and the Trouble Company Prospector. In this month's Corporate Restructuring Review, we'll discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filing and other statistics. Second, large Chapter 11 filings TCR editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of the major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. Fourth, reminders about debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you're unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now, let's review the largest Chapter 11 cases in July 2011. Danilo Munoz reports that three companies with assets in excess of $100 million commenced Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings in July 2011. This raised the total number of Chapter 11 filings involving assets exceeding $100 million for the first 7 months of 2011, or so-called mega cases, to 43 companies, an average of 6 mega cases per month. The July mega case filings, however, were lowered compared to prior months. In June alone, 8 such cases were filed. During the first 7 months of last year, a total of 64 mega cases were filed, a difference of 33% from this year's. In July 2010, 7 mega cases were filed. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 105 mega cases were filed, an average of about 9 per month. Of the July 2011 Chapter 11 debtors, no company reported assets in excess of $1 billion in assets. So far this year, only 2 Chapter 11 bankruptcy involve more than $1 billion in assets. Border Group and MSR Resort Golf Course. Both filed in February. During the first 7 months of 2010, there were 2 companies that filed for Chapter 11 with assets in excess of $1 billion. Both billion-dollar filings occurred in July 2010. Innkeepers USA Trust and Protec Holdings, LLC. The largest Chapter 11 filing for July 2011 was by Athens, Greece-based Omega Navigation Enterprise Incorporated. The company disclosed assets of US$526 million and debt totaling $359.5 million. Omega and its affiliates own a fleet of 8 high-specification product tankers, with each vessel owned by a separate debtor entity. Gregory McGath, Omega's chief financial officer, said in a court filing that the global recession lessened demand for international charter shipping of refined petroleum products, and this negatively impacted Omega's business. Omega said it was promised by its senior lenders a 3-year extension on its senior debt facility if certain conditions were met. Omega believes it has met those conditions, yet the senior lenders did not consent to the agreed-upon extension. Under threat of default and acceleration of debt, Omega was forced to file Chapter 11 cases to protect its interest. Omega filed for Chapter 11 protection on July 8th with U.S. Bankruptcy Court in the Southern District of Texas in Houston before Judge Karen Brown. The next largest Chapter 11 filing was by Arkbrook Laguna Holdings, LLC, which disclosed assets of $246.2 million against total debt of $176.4 million as of March 31st, 2011. Archbrook and certain of its affiliates filed July 8 with bankruptcy court for the Southern District of New York. Archbrook is a procurement and distribution intermediary between production companies and end retailers. It distributes consumer electronics, computers, appliances to principal customers that include Walmart Stores Incorporated, Best Buy Company, and Costco Wholesale Corp. Arkbrook is seeking to sell substantially all of its assets at a bankruptcy auction on August 8th. Liquidator Gordon Brothers Group, LLC, emerged as the winning bidder. Archbrook is aiming for a quick sale of the business. The debtors engaged in a marketing process for the assets starting May and was in talks with 47 potential bidders, but failed to sign a deal for a stalking horse bidder before Chapter 11 filing. The third largest Chapter 11 case for the July 2011 was filed by Amsterdam-based Searling Shipping Management BV and parent Marco Polo Seatrade BV. The company, along with affiliates, owns 6 tankers and bulk carriers. Searland and Marco Polo filed for Chapter 11 protection July 29th with the Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York. The petition said assets and debts were both between $100 million and $500 million. Marco Polo explained in court filings that Credit Aracol Corporation, an investment bank, as an agent of the company's lenders, seized one ship on July 21st and was on the cusp of seizing 2 more on July 29th. The arrest of the vessel was authorized by the UK Admiralty Court. Credit Aracol also attached a bank account with almost $1.8 million on July 29th. The Chapter 11 filing precluded the seizure of the other 2 vessels. Credit Aracol is questioning the jurisdiction of the U.S. courts to hear the bankruptcy plea. Credit Aracol also is accusing Marco Polo of filing in bad faith. Mr. Munoz further reports that the number of prepackaged or pre-negotiated megacase restructurings remained at 10, as no large prepacked or pre-negotiated cases were filed in July. Thus far, the prepacks comprised 23% of the 43 mega cases this year. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 35 prepacked prearranged cases were filed, or about 1 in every 3 filings. Of the July mega cases, 2 went to the Southern District of New York, while 1 went to the Southern District of Texas. For the first 4 months of 2011, 22 mega cases went to Delaware and 9 went to the Southern District of New York. The rest were distributed among various bankruptcy courts throughout the U.S. Lehman Brothers Holding Corporation remains the biggest corporate bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, had $639 billion in total assets and $613 billion in total debts at the time of its filing. This year, the largest failure was by MSR Resort Golf Course, LLC, which had $2.2 billion in assets and $1.9 billion in debt as of November 30, 2010. MSR and its affiliates own and operate 5 iconic luxury resort properties with related real estate properties and amenities. The resort subjects to the filings are Grand Wailea Resort and Spa, Arizona Biltmore, and the La Quinta Resort and Club in PGA West, Doral Golf Resort and Spa, and Claremont Resort and Spa. MSR and its affiliates filed for Chapter 11 protection with the Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York on February 1st. Now, let's turn to the topic of large Chapter 11 filings troubled company reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Carlo Fernandez compiled a list of 6 companies that may be close to filing for bankruptcy. They are Dynegy, Lee Enterprises, Quantum Fuel, Next Wave Wireless, RealMex, and PMI Group. Vice Chancellor Donald Parsons of Delaware Court of Chancery on July 29th thumbed down the PSEG request for an order to hold up Dynegy's $1.7 billion restructuring, which was launched earlier in July. The judge said PSEG, which leases plants to Dynegy, failed to show it is likely to succeed on the merits of the claims that Dynegy restructuring would run afoul of contract protections. Judge Parsons also found it unlikely Dynegy's restructuring would later be found to be a fraud on creditors. The corporate debt restructuring will be managed by investment bank Credit Suisse. Under the proposal, Dynegy will split its coal and natural gas generating assets into 2 separate entities that will be bankruptcy remote from the parent holding company, Dynegy Holdings Incorporated. The new companies could be sold or pay dividends to shareholders even if holding company eventually defaults on its $3 billion of bonds. PSEG, which is owed $790 million by Dynegy, in lease payment, said the reorganization fraudulently transfers assets away from the parent holding company, which guarantees the leases. Liberty View Capital Management, which owns $30 million of the Dinergy bond, is pursuing a similar action in New York. Texas-based Dinergy produces and sells electric energy capacity ancillary services in key U.S. markets. In August last year, Dinergy tried to sell the business to an affiliate of the Blackstone Group for $450 per share, or roughly $4.7 billion. That offer was raised to $5 a share in November. However, Dinergy shareholders led by Carl Icahn and investment fund Seneca thumbed down both offers. In December 2010, an affiliate of Icahn commenced a tender offer to purchase all of the outstanding shares of Dinergy common stock for $5.50 share in cash, or roughly $665 million in the aggregate. In February 2011, Icahn Enterprises LP terminated the proposed merger agreement with the company after it failed to garner the required number of shareholder votes. Dinergy warned stockholders in March this year it might be forced into bankruptcy if it is unable to renegotiate the terms of the existing debt. The company's balance sheet at March 31, 2011 showed $9.82 billion in total assets, $7.15 billion in total liabilities, and $2.67 billion in total stockholders' equity. Lee Enterprises Incorporated, the owner of St. Louis Post-Dispatch and 52 other daily newspapers, is offering lenders stock in higher interest rates to entice as an enticement to refinance and avoid bankruptcy. Bloomberg News has reported, citing four people familiar with the matter, if not enough lenders accept the proposal, it would be carried out through a pre-packed filing, the people said. Lee is facing the maturity of about $1 billion in term loans and revolving credit in April 2012. A bid to sell high-yield debt in May failed. Lee Enterprises has gained support from two main lenders, namely Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and hedge fund Monarch Alternative Capital, for the debt exchange offer, the Wall Street Journal reported. One of the journal's sources said the two main creditors could end up owning about 13% of the newspaper publisher under the deal terms being discussed. The journal sources said Lee plans to ask lenders in coming weeks to exchange their current debt for new debt that matures later and pays higher interest rates. Based in Davenport, Iowa, Lee Enterprise has 49 daily newspapers and a joint interest in four others, rapidly growing online sites, and more than 300 weekly newspapers and specialty publications in 23 states. Lee's newspapers have circulation of about 1.5 million daily and 1.8 million Sunday, reaching 4 million readers daily. The company's balance sheet at March 27, 2011, showed $1.40 billion in total assets, $1.32 billion in total liabilities, and $77.65 million in total equity. Quantum Fuel Systems Technologies Worldwide Incorporated, facing imminent maturities, said in July it needs to raise capital, refinance its debt, or secure another maturity extension in coming weeks to avoid a default. The company reported a net loss of $11 million on $20 million in revenue for fiscal year ended April 30, 2011, compared with its net loss of $46 million on $9.7 million of revenue for fiscal year 2010. Ernst & Young LLP in Orange County, California, the auditor noted the Quantum Fuel's recurring losses and negative cash flows combined with company's existing sources of liquidity and other conditions raised substantial doubt about its ability to continue as a going concern. The company's balance sheet on March 31, 2011 showed $71.97 million in total assets, $33.39 million in total liabilities, and stockholders' equity of $38.58 million. Based in Irvine, California, Quantum Fuel develops and produces advanced clean propulsion systems and renewed energy generation systems and services. In its annual report, the company said it anticipates it will need to raise a significant amount of debt or equity capital in the near future to repay certain obligations owed to the company's senior secured lender when they mature. As of June 15, 2011, the total amount owed to the company's senior secured lender was approximately $15.5 million, which includes approximately $12.5 million in principal and interest due under three convertible promissory notes that are scheduled to mature on August 31, 2011, and a $3.0 million term note that is potentially payable in cash upon demand beginning on August 1, 2011. If the company's stock is below $10 at the time demand for payment is made. NextWave Wireless Incorporated failed to pay off $129 million in senior secured first lien notes when they matured on July 17th. NextWave Wireless has entered into an agreement with the holders of its secured notes pursuant to which the holders forbear from exercising their rights and remedies. The forbearance agreement will provide the company until September 30, 2011 to complete a refinancing transaction. NextWave has $179 million in senior subordinate second lien notes that mature in November. In addition, there are $640 million in senior subordinate third lien notes that mature in December. The company said in regulatory filings that it has been delayed in selling wireless spectrum licenses. For the first quarter, there was no income, leading to a $5.1 million loss from the operations and a $61 million net loss, taking into consideration $58.5 million of interest expense. As of April 2nd, there was $31.5 million in cash among assets on the books for $484.5 million. San Diego, California-based NextWave Wireless is a wireless technology company that manages and maintains worldwide wireless spectrum licenses. The company's balance sheet at April 2nd, 2011, showed $484.5 million in total assets, $941.1 million in total liabilities, and a stockholder's deficit of $456.6 million. Real Mexicans Restaurants Incorporated reached an agreement with lenders to waive and amend certain covenants as it works to revise its corporate capital structure. As part of the agreement, the company made a $9.1 million interest payment due July 1st on the $130 million second lien senior secured note. An affiliate of Sun Capital Partners provides additional liquidity as part of the ongoing restructuring process. RealMex said all financial stockholders are working together on a revised capital structure that recognizes economic realities and addresses future needs. Based in Cypress, California, RealMex Restaurant operates 180 restaurants under the trade names El Torito Restaurant, Chevy's Fresh Mex, and Acapulco Mexican Restaurant and Cantina. Total revenues for 12 months ended March 2011 were $474 million. The PMI Group Incorporated disclosed a regulatory filing that as of June 30, 2011, the policyholder's position at its wholly owned subsidiary, PMI Mortgage Insurance Company, was below the minimum required by Arizona law, and its risk to capital ratio exceeded the regulatory maximum 25-1 set by various other states. In 16 states, if a mortgage insurer does not meet a required minimum policyholder's position, calculated in accordance with the statutory formulae, or exceeds a maximum permitted risk-to-capital ratio of 25-1, it may be prohibited from writing new business. In two of those states, mortgage insurers are required to cease writing new business immediately if and so long as they fail to meet the capital requirements. In the remaining 14 states, including Arizona, regulators exercise discretion as to whether the mortgage insurer may continue writing new business. PMI Mortgage is currently operating under regulatory waivers and discretion in the majority of the 14 states. Four of PMI Mortgage waivers expire December 31, 2011. or earlier. Each of the waivers issued to PMI Mortgage may be written or withdrawn at any time by the applicable insurance department. PMI posted a consolidation net loss of $134.8 million and $261.6 million for the second quarter and the first 6 months of 2011, respectively, compared to net losses of $150.6 million and $307.5 million for the corresponding periods in 2010. According to PMI, in light of the second quarter losses, it expects the number of states in which PMI Mortgage is precluded from writing new business will significantly increase. PMI said it is not clear what actions, if any, the insurance regulators in states that do not have capital adequacy requirements may take as a result of PMI Mortgage failing to meet capital adequacy requirements established by one or more states. Based in Walnut Creek, California, the PMI Group offers residential mortgage insurance and credit enhancement products. In addition to the challenge companies mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the Trouble Company Reporter provides ongoing reports about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheets in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in four large Chapter 11 cases that Troubled Company Reporter editors monitor day by day. Ivy Magdalero identifies two major disputes pending in the Lehman Brothers case. The disputes involves Lehman's lawsuits against Barclays PLC for unpaid bonuses to former Lehman's employees and against J.P. Morgan Chase over common law claims. In an August 5th filing with U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Manhattan, Barclay asked Judge James Peck to dismiss Lehman's lawsuit seeking millions of dollars in unpaid bonuses from Barclays that allegedly should have been paid to former Lehman Brother employees. The UK bank made a similar request in June, shortly after Barclays defeated an $11 billion lawsuit brought by the Lehman Holding Company. In recent court filing, Barclays reiterated that it has already paid $2 billion to Lehman employees who transferred to Barclays as part of the UK bank's September 2008 purchase of Lehman's North American broker unit. Lehman has argued that the $2 billion figure agreed in 2008 applied only to bonuses, and because only $1.5 billion of the $2 billion were in actual bonuses, Barclays still owes an additional $500 million to what's left of Lehman. Lehman has also said in court papers that Barclays breached the contract. Barclays countered that the $2 billion number was a good faith estimate and that it referred to all kinds of compensation, not just bonuses. The UK bank complained that what should have been an estimate is touted by Lehman to have become a contractual obligation. The dispute on the unpaid bonuses is a residual matter stemming from Lehman's lawsuit last year against Barclays. Lehman accused the UK bank under the lawsuit of negotiating a discount not adequately disclosed to the court when it bought Lehman's brokers back in 2008. Judge Peck in February held that Barclays' 2008 acquisition of Lehman broker unit was done in good faith, despite the not-so-perfect conditions surrounding such a sale. More recently, the judge signed a final orders on July 15th denying Lehman's bid to recoup money from Barclays over the $11 billion windfall allegedly received by Barclays on its broker unit purchase. Judge Peck also entered a further order on June 6 in favor of the trustee overseeing the liquidation of the remaining assets of the Lehman broker unit. The decision called for Barclays to pay trustee James Giddens all $2 billion in a disputed margin collateral account and pay a 5% interest. On July 15th, Barclays took an appeal from the decision. In a July 29th court filing, Barclays said it also has taken an appeal from Judge Peck's ruling that the UK bank is not unconditionally entitled to about $769 million in Lehman's customer account. For his part, the Lehman trustee took an appeal from Judge Peck's July 22nd ruling that awarded $1.1 billion to Barclays. The trustee was told to return $1 billion in so-called clearance box to the UK bank and additional assets of $769 million if they weren't needed for customers. The trustee said in an appeal that he wanted 9% interest on the margin assets, not 5%. In other news, on July 28th, the Lehman Brothers Holding Company appealed Judge Peck's July 15th final order that it can't recover the alleged billions of dollars in windfall made by Barclays when it bought the Lehman Brothers unit. J.P. Morgan Chase, sued for $8.6 billion by Lehman Brothers Holdings, said the defunct firm's common law claims against it must be decided by a U.S. District Court rather than a bankruptcy judge. The second biggest U.S. bank has been fighting Lehman's May 2010 suit before the bankruptcy court, fending off demands for a return of $8.6 billion in collateral, plus tens of billions of dollars in damages for allegedly accelerating the former investment bank's demise. J.P. Morgan served as Lehman's main clearing bank during the 2008 financial crisis. In an August 6 court filing, J.P. Morgan said the June 2011 U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the Anna Nicole Smith case, or Stern v. Marshall, limited the power of bankruptcy judges to rule on such common law claims. Under the Stern ruling, a district court judge must determine damage claims brought under New York state law. J.P. Morgan said the Lehman claims are legally indistinguishable from the counterclaims in the Stern case. Lehman disagreed on the impact of the Anna Nicole Smith case. Lehman contended that nothing in the case imposes a blanket prohibition against bankruptcy courts deciding common law claims on a final basis. The Lehman lawsuit claimed that J.P. Morgan demanded loan guarantees that fatally weakened the firm. J.P. Morgan filed a countersuit alleging that Lehman defrauded it into making a $70 billion loan around the time of the firm's September 2008 bankruptcy. A revised schedule order on the case was entered July 27th. Trial is set to begin August 13, 2012. Fact discovery is to be completed by December 2011, while expert discovery is to be completed by March 2012. Irving H. Pickard, the trustee appointed under the Securities Investor Protection Act to oversee the liquidation of Bernard L. Madoff Investment Securities Incorporated, on July 28th brought home a $1.03 billion settlement from the second largest group of feeder funds that funneled money into the Madoff Ponzi scheme. The Madoff trustee sued investments firm Tremont Group Holdings Incorporated, Oppenheimer Acquisition Group, which owns the Tremont Hedge Fund, Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Company, and affiliates in December, seeking to recover about $2.1 billion that the investment funds received directly from Madoff firm. The lawsuit was unsealed in March. Pursuant to the settlement, in return for the $1.03 billion payment into escrow, the investment funds will receive about $3 billion in approved customer claims. The settlement is structured so that the distributions on the funds' claims will be paid directly to the funds' customers. Combined with the $2.6 billion the Madoff trustee has on hand and the $5 billion he will receive in final approval of the settlement with the late Jeffrey Picower, the trustee will have $8.6 billion, or enough to pay almost half of the $17.3 billion in principal that customers lost with Madoff. The money on hand doesn't include an additional $2.2 billion through the government's portion of the Picower settlement. Under arrangements with government, the trustee will distribute the $2.2 billion. The hearing to approve the Tremont settlement will take place September 13th. Bernard L. Madoff Investment Securities, LLC, and Bernard L. Madoff orchestrated the largest Ponzi scheme in history, with losses topping $50 billion. On July 28th, the Federal District Court in Manhattan dismissed the larger part of the Madoff trustees' lawsuit against HSBC Holdings PLC. The trustee had sued HSBC alleging that the London-based bank enabled Madoff's Ponzi scheme and engaged in financial fraud and misconduct, being willfully bind to the fraud. The complaint sought $9 billion, including $2.3 billion for receipt of fraudulent transfers. In a 26-page opinion, U.S. District Court Jed Rakoff dismissed what he said were $6.6 billion of common law claims for unjust enrichment, aiding and abetting fraud, and aiding and abetting breach of fiduciary duty. Judge Rakoff sent the remnants of the lawsuit back to the bankruptcy court for further proceedings so the Madoff trustee can pursue $2.2 billion in fraudulent transfer claims. Judge Rakoff opened his opinion by stating the familiar rule that bankruptcy trustees don't have the right to assert claims against third parties on behalf of the estate's creditors. The trustee previously argued that the Securities Investor Protection Act allows him to take over customers' claims that he's paid. Hobart Truesdale, the trustee for the creditors' trust, established under Extended Stay Incorporated's confirmed Chapter 11 plan, is asking the bankruptcy court to send four lawsuits that he filed to the U.S. District Court and one to the state court. The trustee is concerned that the bankruptcy court can't properly hear the case in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court June opinion in Stern v. Marshall, the controversial case involving the estates of Nana Nicole Smith. The trustee filed five lawsuits in June seeking $6.3 billion from Blackstone Group LP, which owned the hotel operator before the leveraged buyout in June of 2007. Blackstone later was in the group buying back the business under the Chapter 11 plan. In some of the suits, the trustee is also suing David Lichtenstein and Lightstone Group LLC, the company he controlled that was buyer in the LBO. Although the trustee sued in bankruptcy court, he now says that the Stern decision at a minimum creates ambiguity over whether the bankruptcy court can hear the case. The extended stay trustee is represented by the law firm Baker & Hosteller, LLP, the same firm representing the trustee liquidating Bernard L. Madoff's Investment Securities Incorporated. The Madoff trustee has been opposing removal of lawsuits from bankruptcy court. Extended Stay operates more than 680 long-term lodging properties in 44 states. Blackstone, Centerbridge Partners LP, and Paulson & Company were in the group that bought the business through the Chapter 11 plan for $3.93 billion in cash. The plan was implemented in October. Extended Stay's Chapter 11 petition in June 2009 listed assets of $7.1 billion against debt totaling $7.6 billion. The dispute over the insider trading allegations remains the final issue in the plan process hearing in the case of Washington Mutual Incorporated. WaMu shareholders say the holding company, at the heart of the largest banking collapse in U.S. history, ran a profoundly flawed bankruptcy case, one that means a $7 billion payday for powerful creditors at the expense of others. Shareholders contend that the holding company bent over backward to assist major hedge fund investors while brushing aside competing claims in the development of the plan. The four named hedge funds are Appaloosa Management LP, Centerbridge Partners LP, Owl Creek Asset Management LP, and Aurelius Capital Management. Together, they hold $2 billion in claims. The insider trading allegations first gained attention back in December. The four hedge funds insist that they did not profit unfairly and assert that they played by the rules. The Official Creditors Committee supports the hedge funds' assertions. The Creditors Committee said it found nothing amiss in the hedge funds' trading during WaMu's bankruptcy case. The bankruptcy court denied confirmation of an earlier version of WaMu's plan in January. WaMu was back before the Delaware Bankruptcy Court July 13th. shareholders will see no recovery under the current plan, which was negotiated with J.P. Morgan Chase, the hedge funds, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. The plan, among other things, is based on the settlement of a billion-dollar lawsuit pitting WaMu, J.P. Morgan, and FDIC against each other. Shareholders have asked Judge Walrath to reject the plan on allegations of insider trading. Testimony in the WaMu bankruptcy plan hearing wrapped up on July 21st. Final written arguments and closing oral arguments are expected in August. WaMu is the biggest bank failure in U.S. history, with the holding company listing $4.49 billion in assets versus $7.83 billion in liabilities. J.P. Morgan acquired WaMu's banking unit in 2008 for $1.88 billion. The Troubled Company Reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TSR at no cost or no obligation. Julianne Lopez reports about five Chapter 11 debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. Tribune Company, W.R. Grace & Company, Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual, and Quigley. Delaware Bankruptcy Court Judge Kevin Carey, at a June 28th hearing, urged Tribune Company and its rival, Aurelius, to continue their discussion towards consensual resolution. Judge Carey also stated that he would spend time in July to come up with a decision on which Chapter 11 plan for Tribune and its debtors, affiliates, he will confirm, although he made no promises when he would deliver. So far, no ruling has been issued by Judge Carey, although the Creditors Committee has submitted a proposed order regarding admissibility of trial exhibits with respect to the confirmation of the completing plans. The latest development in the case involves a reshuffling that will help the company's published business reduce the size of its finance and administrative departments. Tribune Company spokesman Gary Whiteman said some jobs are being eliminated, but declined to provide specific information. The changes will give Chicago Tribune publisher Tony Hunter responsibility for all Tribune Company newspapers except the Los Angeles Times. The other newspapers reporting to Mr. Hunter are the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Orlando, Florida, the Sun Baltimore, the Hartford, Connecticut Current, the Morning Call of Allentown, PA, and the Daily Press of Newport, the Daily Press of Newport News, Virginia. With Mr. Hunter taking on more duties, Tribune promoted Vince Casanova to a president and chief operating officer of Chicago Tribune Media Group. In that role, Mr. Casanova will oversee day-to-day operations of the Chicago Tribune and other holdings in that division. The Los Angeles Times, and the largest Tribune's newspaper, still reports to its publisher, Eddie Hartenstein, who was named Tribune Company's CEO in May. Tribune's Chapter 11 reorganization began in December 2008. Judge Ronald Buckwalter of the Delaware District Court has not yet issued a decision affirming Judge Judith Fitzgerald's order confirming W.R. Grace's joint plan for reorganization issued last January 31st. However, Grace CEO Fred Festa said during the July 26 investor conference call that the chemical company remains highly confident that the district court will rule in favor of its plan for reorganization on all matters. Mr. Fiesta said the oral arguments for the appeals held on June 28th and 29th were exactly as the company had expected. He added that the company was not surprised by any of the arguments or issues raised by the appellates. According to Mr. Fiesta, the company has received some questions as to whether it can emerge with certain appeals outstanding. He said that if the district court affirms Grace's plan and rules in favor on the appeals, the appellants would have the choice to appeal further to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. He said that it is possible that the company could emerge with certain types of appeals outstanding and cited as an example that the company may seek to emerge with the default interest issue on appeal or with other issues on appeal that do not affect the resolution of the company's asbestos liability. That decision would have to be made with consultation with our co-proponents, Mr. Fiesta said. Mr. Festa ended his speech at the conference by conference call by saying the bankruptcy has been an incredible long process and we are all eager to see it conclude as soon as possible. Our only real course at this point is to wait for the district court ruling on affirmation and the appeals. W.R. Grace marked his 10th year in bankruptcy on April 2, 2011. Lehman Brothers obtained a court order to suspend the prosecution of the rival Chapter 11 plans of reorganization proposed by its creditors. In an order dated July 21st, Judge James Peck approved an agreement between the company and certain of its creditors to hold in abeyance the prosecution of the competing plans. The agreement was hammered out after Lehman's filed late last month a third version of its plan, which reportedly has broader support from creditors, including a group led by Goldman Sachs Bank USA and the Haddock Group of Lehman Brothers creditors. The plan, if confirmed, would enable the company and its affiliated debtors to pay an estimated $65 billion to their creditors. On July 21st order also imposed a stay on any ongoing proceeding authorized by Judge Peck, prior ruling dated April 14th in connection with the confirmation of Lehman's plan. It also contains a provision protecting the rights of any party to seek discovery. The provision was proposed lately by Lehman after creditors including American National Insurance Company, Lehman Brothers Finance AG's liquidator, and Centerbridge Credit Advisors LLC stressed the need to conduct a plan related to discovery to ensure that all claimants are treated fairly. Centerbridge complained that the Lehman plan weighs in favor of creditors that have executed so-called plan support agreements. It argued that the plan disregards a prior court order mandating the allowance and treatment of claims previously owned by Lehman Brothers Bancorp AG, which are now beneficially owned by Centerbridge and other companies. Meanwhile, the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors and the ad hoc group expressed their support for the approval of the agreement to suspend the prosecution of the competing plans. The Creditors Committee said the agreement is a precondition to the plan support agreements, which are essential to the plan process. Lehman said it won't be serving any additional notice of the August 30th hearing on the approval of the disclosure statement. Lehman has been in bankruptcy since September 15, 2008. Delaware bankruptcy judge Mary F. Walrath convened a three-day hearing in July to consider Washington Mutual revised reorganization plan, which centers on the settlement of lawsuits pitting WaMu and Federal Deposit Insurance Group and J.P. Morgan against one another. The lawsuits were filed after the FDIC seized WaMu's flagship bank in 2008 and sold its assets to J.P. Morgan in the largest bank failure in U.S. history. The judge ruled in January that the proposed settlement was reasonable but refused to confirm WaMu's plan until changes were made. WaMu shareholders opposed the new plan, saying it favors hedge funds who dominated negotiations with J.P. Morgan for their own gain and used inside information from the bankruptcy to trade in Washington Mutual securities. WaMu awaits the court's ruling on the plan. WaMu filed for bankruptcy on September 26, 2008, the day after its banking unit was taken over by regulators and sold to J.P. Morgan for $1.9 billion. Quigley Company is asking U.S. Bankruptcy Court Judge Stuart Bernstein for permission to borrow as much as $65 million from parent Pfizer Incorporated. The cash would extend Quigley to $20 billion loan agreement from 2004 when the unit entered bankruptcy and finance the case until February 2012, Quigley said. The additional money and time will free Quigley to work with Pfizer and a committee of creditors toward confirmation and consummating of a reorganization plan, Quigley said. Lawyers for the U.S. trustee, an arm of Justice Department, asked the court in December to end Quigley's bankruptcy. Creditors alleged asbestos-related health issues have been unable to sue New York-based Pfizer during the case, and many of them have died, the U.S. trustee said. Christopher Loader, a Pfizer spokesman, said the company looks forward to working through a bankruptcy plan with Quigley and his creditors, which the extension of the credit agreement will allow. Mr. Loader said, in 30 years of asbestos litigation, Pfizer has never been found to be derivatively liable for Quigley's liabilities. Quigley's products were made for decades before Pfizer acquired it, he said. A hearing on the request to dismiss Quigley's bankruptcy or approve proposed terms of its reorganization set for August 4th was adjourned without being rescheduled, according to the court papers. Quigley, founded in 1916, made three products for the steel industry from 1940s to the 1970s that contained asbestos. Pfizer bought Quigley in 1968, and the company stopped most operations in 1992. Pfizer said it never made or sold any Quigley products, and some claimants hadn't released Pfizer from alleged derivative liability. Judge Bernstein refused to allow Quigley to exit Chapter 11 court protection in September, saying Pfizer had manipulated the process to benefit itself. Pfizer and a committee of asbestos claimants won his approval of the agreement that will support the new Chapter 11 plan. The plan still requires court approval. An ad hoc committee of tort victims, which represents 40,000 asbestos claimants, asked a court in October 2010 to have Quigley's bankruptcy dismissed so it could bring tort claims which are otherwise blocked by bankruptcy law. The court called Quigley an asset-less dummy entity that was resurrected, handed Pfizer money losing claims handling unit, and then propped up Pfizer's pursuant to a non-arm's-length contract of limited duration, all in order to provide Quigley's extremely well-heeled, non-debtor parent, Pfizer, with a channeling injunction against present and future asbestos claims. The group said Quigley has depleted insurance assets to sustain $54 million in operating losses and $34 million in professional fees. In April, the bankruptcy court approved a plan support agreement with Pfizer and the Ad Hoc Asbestos Claimants Committee. The plan supported agreement was designed to aid in implementation of the final settlement negotiation among Quigley, Pfizer, and the committee. Quigley's sixth amended plan filed in April would have resolved disputes over how much Pfizer should contribute by having it turn over a 281,581 square feet building leased to a brewery to help pay asbestos claims. The terms of that reorganization also required Pfizer to forgive $86 million secured claims, a $12.6 million bankruptcy loan, and unsecured claims of $33 million. Pfizer would also contribute $81 million in insurance proceeds, according to the court papers. Asbestos claims against Quigley may total $4.45 billion during the next 42 years, according to the testimony cited by Judge Bernstein in September. In November, Pfizer reported $701 million third-quarter charge for asbestos litigation related to Quigley. Psych Marikon Castilian reports about three companies that issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence pursuant to the plans of reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases in July 2011. They are New Jersey Motorsports Park, Perkins and Marie Callenders, and Nebraska Brook. After 4 months in Chapter 11 proceeding, the bankruptcy judge approved New Jersey Motorsports Park restructuring plan, allowing the park to emerge from bankruptcy. The decision allows NEI Motorsports LLC to purchase a majority stake in the park for approximately $22.5 million. The group had previously provided New Jersey Motorsports with a $2 million infusion of money for legal fees, food services at the park, and operating costs, priority tax claims, and to pay unsecured debt. The part of the bankruptcy emergence plan secured lender Merrill Lynch Mortgage Incorporated will cut $10 million from its $30 million in loans to the park. NEI, an investor group that includes some of the park's owners, will also pay out $2 million to help the raceway meet outstanding financial obligations. The plan gives Merrill Lynch owed $30.4 million, $20 million in new secured notes, plus 19.9% of the equity. General unsecured creditors with claims of up to $2.4 million have a recovery of 21% to 33%. Perkins and Marie Callender filed a plan of reorganization to implement a debt agreement the restaurant operator negotiated with creditors before it sought Chapter 11 court protection. Holders of the senior unsecured notes owed $204 million, and general unsecured creditors owed as much as $25 million would get new stock under the plan. The proposed disclosed statement, filed along with the plan, doesn't tell creditors how much they stand to receive as a percentage recovery. General unsecured creditors have the option of taking 10% cash rather than stock, so long as the total cash payout doesn't exceed $1.5 billion. About $103 million owing on the secured notes would be rolled over into a new secured note of the same amount plus interest under the plan. Holders of the existing stock and subordinate claims would get nothing. Note holders and general unsecured creditors will be allowed to vote on the plan. Funds managed by Wyzetta Investment Partners LLC would get control of the reorganized company after the plan is confirmed. The court scheduled an August 22, 2011 hearing to consider the disclosure statement. Finally, Nebraska Book Company, the operator of the chain College Bookstores, asked the bankruptcy court to let creditors vote on a reorganization plan that would turn the company over to two groups of note holders. The company intends to exit bankruptcy by November 3rd. The plan is based on a consensual deal with the debtors, key stakeholders, and contemplates a significant deleveraging of the debtors' balance sheet, the company said in a disclosure statement describing the proposal. The company has an agreement supported by holders of more than 95% of its 8.625% senior subordinate notes and more than 75% of its 11% discount notes. The bookseller said it will restructure about $450 million in loans and bonds of its parent, NBC Acquisition Corp. and affiliates. Under the plan, $175 million of the senior subordinate notes would be converted into $30.6 million in secured notes, $120 million in unsecured notes, and 78% of the new equity. Holders of the $77 million in 11% discount notes would get the remaining 22% of stock. Secured lenders owed about $26.3 million and secured note holders owed about $200 million would be paid in full with cash. That ends the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for July 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. If you'd like to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nina Novak at 240-629-3300 or visit bankrupt.com/free trial and we'll add you to the distribution list. That telephone number again, 240-629-3300, and that web address again, bankrupt.com/free trial. Be sure to tune in to our next restructuring review in September 16th. Thank you for listening. We are closing the test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, trying to get an idea how long we are right now. This is a testing 1, 2, 3. Get ready to close or close. Testing 1, 2, 3. We are still on a test. Closing the test. 1, 2.